Hello, this is Zach Martin, editor for Gun ID Magazine. The revised draft of FIPS 201-2 has been released with numerous changes. Additional contactless functionality, new biometrics, and mobile abilities have all been included. Today we're speaking with Neville Pattinson from Gemalto about the changes and his concerns about the draft.
Hi, Zach, and thank you for letting me give you some opinions this morning. Always a pleasure. I think certainly the new draft of FIPS 201-2 is long overdue. It's glad to see it now in our hands and for us to now be able to comment on. There are a lot of new, I think, overdue features that are now being added into this specification. Obviously, the first one was released in 2004, and I think we're definitely due for a serious update on features that have been certainly requested and thought about by the implementing federal agencies. So this new draft encompasses several good items, I think, for us to move forward into the next, you know, 5, 10 years, whatever the revision will timeline will be. But the main key issues I see is the inclusion of biometric technology. This is a very significant change to previous version. It's going to allow for on-card matching of fingerprints. It's going to allow for off-card matching of fingerprints, potentially off-card matching of iris. The facial photo now included should be readable by simple applications to verify the individual presenting the card. So there's a lot of good, I think, extra authentication features that have been missing to date. It's just been really a PIN-based approach. So now there's some options to allow new forms of authentication to be used rather than just the basic PIN technology. And I think most significant in terms of other features, in from what I can see, is the introduction of a virtual contact interface over a secure contactless messaging session. And I think that has been something that we've been missing greatly. We've had very limited use of cryptographic services over the contactless interface, and that's been a limiting factor for implementation of these higher-level services. To date, they've only been allowed through the contact side, and that has certainly limited the contactless industry to really embrace these type of technologies. It's also, I think, preparing us for the future when we have mobile devices, which are going to have contactless capability through NFC, et cetera, to now perform these rich set of services in a secure manner through the radio interface, which is, I think, one of the most significant changes I see here. And that's really going to allow a lot more confidence in the ability of the card to now be used in the contactless mode rather than just in the contact mode for those services.
Going on the contactless portion, does this basically make everything that was just about everything that was available on the contact portion of the chip available on the contactless interface?
That is correct. There are a few limitations to do with card authentication, and that's fine. That needs to be done to set up the secure channel. But once you have an established virtual contact interface, which is what the terminology is using, it allows you to perform cryptographic services such as digital signature and so forth. There are some other minor changes that go through, introducing some tactile features on the card to allow for disabled folks who maybe have a harder sight to be able to feel the orientation of the card, that kind of thing. So I think there's some valuable additions. They're not by any means mandatory, but certainly now gives the option to consider notching the card or making some form of ridging or feature that can be felt, so the orientation of the card can be understood when it's inserted into a reader. The the other features are fairly small in terms of new feature sets. I've talked about the larger ones. I think the main message from this point is that this is a major revision in terms of functionality, and we need to worry about the installed infrastructure that's been there for now some years and is still being deployed. As we now move to a new generation of specification, we have probably the challenge that's not mentioned here in too great a depth is the interoperability of this new generation of card with, you know, an updated new generation of infrastructure. There are also some other specifications that are subordinate to FIPS 201-2 draft. There are SP800 series of documents. They need to be updated in concert with this. This sets the policy, et cetera, and the detail is really defined in those SP800s. And it's very important that we have all of those in line when it comes to implementing new generations of card and infrastructure equipment. I think there's also a necessary revision in the GSA approved products list and how products are going to get onto that and how combinations of products can be validated before they impact the field. So there's quite a bit of learning that's been done over the last few years as far as what has worked, what has not worked, and how we can improve what we're doing in moving forward to make this more reliable.
Adding the facial image to the card, I know, like you said, 2004 was the first draft, and there was always talk about constraints on the memory of the chip. Now that you're adding, you know, fingerprint templates, maybe a couple of different types of fingerprint templates, an iris template, and the facial image, do you foresee any issues with space constraints on the actual card?
All of the biometrics have either a template format, so the facial is probably the one that is full image.
Right.
The fingers and iris can be templates, so they can be reduced down to fairly small sizes. A typical fingerprint is 512 bytes. An iris can be pretty small, 1 or 2 kilobytes potentially, depending on the way it's done. They need to be digitally signed as well to prove that they are good templates. The facial image, in terms of the definition and bits and pixels, is going to require quite a bit of storage. The generations of PIV cards that are in the market today, there's really two generations, I think, which is somewhere around 64 kilobytes of memory, and then another one of 128 kilobytes of memory. I think we'll certainly see challenges for anybody to implement this FIPS 201-2 draft on anything less than 128 kilobyte device now.
Any thoughts on the idea of the derived credential? Like the mobile piece was probably, I've talked to a lot of people in government, was probably the biggest piece that was missing from the first draft of FIPS 201-2. You know, and now they're suggesting the derived credential. You know, any thoughts on the addition of that and how that's gonna work?
So as long as we've got trusted hardware, then derived credentials can exist and be maintained and the integrity and protected. It is a growing need. Individuals clearly are using a lot more of the standard smartphone technology today for their personal use. And I think it's important to embrace that platform for digital credential storage and then the utilization of that within the handset itself for the applications maintained on that handset. So treating the mobile device as if it was a PC, you know, it's got email, therefore it should be able to do the secure email services. It has a browser, so therefore it should be able to do the secure web apps to remote government resources, et cetera. So those credentials need to be put on the mobile in such a way that they're trusted, can be maintained, can be revoked, et cetera, during the course of the use of that device. In terms of future, there's no reason why a handset which has NFC capability can talk directly to a PIV card and use the credentials that are maintained in the PIV card traditionally. So there are options coming forward that will allow either the coupling of the PIV credential to the mobile or the embedding of that derived credential into the mobile.
Anything missing from the draft that you would have liked to have seen?
The thing that's missing here is a plan in order to ensure that there's a seamless and validated way of bringing this significant change at the top level at FIPS 201, having that ripple down into the SP800s, having that all, you know, set in concrete, so to speak, so that everybody can now implement the next generation of cards and infrastructure, and then organizations will be able to pick and mix their parts and create workable solutions. That I think is missing here, but it hopefully will be covered through the GSA APL discussions that are being considered for updating that process.
Neville, anything else about the draft? Anything else that you think might be of interest to our listeners?
The timing is going to be interesting. Obviously, this is a draft today, and it's got the intention of it being commented on and then finally being published, and we welcome that timeline. The implementation is defined in here as 1 year from publication that we should be implementing, so that will be a challenge from a perspective of the industry responding to these needs. If we remember, the first FIPS 201 was published in 2004, and we started to see product really being deployed in 2006. So a couple of years in terms of significant deployment. So even though this has got a one-year implementation timeline, let's see how that really turns out. This is a significant set of changes, and good changes for that matter.